Welcome to the Sutliffian Report, the place where the news is never hidden and the truth always wins. Today we're going to talk about critical race theory, and for those of you hiding this name through manipulation of words, we are talking about the topics of diversity and equity. But first, since this is a Christian news show, we'll read a passage from the Bible. Yes, it's a Christian news show. We're going to start with Hebrews 12, verse 15. Looking diligently, lest any man fail of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up trouble you, and thereby may be defiled. Verse 15 is a warning. Keep your eyes upon Jesus or else. In the early 1960s, a famous civil rights song, Keep Your Eyes on the Prize, came out. The title of the song is shortened, leaving out the second part of this line, Hold On. This prize is not easy in attaining, but takes time. It is worth the struggle and the time invested. It is said that this song is a direct reference to Philippians 3:14. I press towards the high call, towards the goal, for the prize of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus. Paul describes living for Christ like running a race. A runner keeps his eyes on the finish line. He does not look back. He cannot be lazy or he will lose that opportunity to win. In verse 15, the Greek word for fail actually refers to those who fall behind by being lazy. They do not keep up with the pack. John Chrysostom says in this verse, it means as if they were traveling together on some long journey in a large company. Take heed that no man be left behind. I do not seek this only, that you should arrive yourselves, but also that you should look diligently after the others. So while we're on this race of living for Christ and pursuit of seeing the kingdom of heaven, we have an obligation to ourselves to encourage and lift up our brethren. Living for Christ is up to you to do, but there is also an encouragement obligation. This means it's very important that you run the race with a pack of believers and that they may help you and encourage you when life throws difficult things at you that could slow you down and discourage you. Dear Lord Jesus, help me to keep my eyes on you and the reward you have promised. Lord, surround me with strong men and women of faith that I may be encouraged to continue this race towards the high calling you have given me. Lord, bless them that help and encourage me, that I may run this race you have set me on to win. In Jesus' name, amen. I had the joy of interviewing Jennifer Fonseca this week for this show. This interview is now available to you on YouTube for you to share with your friends, your pastors, your local politicians. What Jennifer has to share is extremely important. What you will hear tonight will be a shock. Shocking, and it'll appall you that such things could ever be taught in any public school since the 1964 Civil Rights Act became law. That makes this law 56 to 57 years old. Think about that. The Civil Rights Act protects all races. When you hear this, this will shock you. Let me get this started first in Blog Talk Radio, and then I will get it right into this. This is got to be the most appalling thing I have ever heard. For today, I have with me Jennifer Fonseca, a semi-retired teacher who is here to talk about the incredible problem of this thing called CRT, critical race theory, that is being brought into school districts everywhere. I'm even hearing about it in places not necessarily in this country and overseas. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Jennifer. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I never cease to be amazed about the gullibility of superintendents, school board members, to bring in what I would consider racist material to teach teachers. But this concept of CRT is not to teach teachers, is it?
It is not. It is a political agenda that has been pushed throughout our colleges across the United States for more than a decade now. It is something that, through my research, I am not the most studied CRT person. It is something, just like you, that I happened across it as I was running for the school board and started to see what was happening in the schools. And what was happening even with my own kids as they went to college. So I noticed that their thinking, going from thinking more in the terms of how they were raised, their morals and their values had changed after coming home from college. So they started with more of a political view that I noticed resonated more with a socialist view. And you know, young adults, they're starting to form their ideas, but that started to concern me. And then as I was running for the school board and researching on just my district's website, I noticed that this critical race theory, or what is actually called diversity, equity, and inclusion, those are the keywords you're going to hear, have come to school districts all around New York. It's all across New York now as it's being pushed out by the New York State Department of Education. Here in Monroe County, within the past year, the superintendents as a whole have basically vowed or came to agreement that they will be including diversity, inclusion, and equity into their schools. We know it as critical race theory because of what it actually is.
I want to get back to one thing. You said that all of the school superintendents in Monroe County, has any of the school districts in this area said openly that they are using, put it the other way, have all of the school districts said they are going to teach CRT, or are they using specific terminology that tells us that?
They're using specific terminology. So BOCES 1 and 2 are also part of this agreement that they will be bringing in diversity, inclusion, and equity. So that's one of the main terms you're going to hear. You're going to hear race. You're going to hear racism. You're going to start hearing about oppression and the true history of what has happened here in Rochester as well as within the United States. You'll start to hear that we weren't actually, our history didn't actually start with the American Revolution or even the American Covenant and back in the 1600s. You will start to hear more terms about that it was a one-sided history, that because of the history of blacks being brought here in the early 1600s, that that's where our history actually began. What is really interesting as I continue to study this, and that's part of the 1619 project that you may have heard of at the federal level. In 1619, as these slaves were being brought, African slaves were being brought from Africa, there were already Africans here in America who were part of the purchasing and trading of black slaves as well as whites, which I thought was just truly interesting. And they were actually paid in terms of land to bring and to sell slaves. So there were a core group of African, and I guess we could call them African-Americans now, back in as our nation began. That even the Indians, they were doing the same in the slave trade and gaining more land and prosperity based on the slave trade. But if you look at the 1619 project, that's that part of history was not included.
The funny thing is the actual first documented slave in the United States was owned by a black man.
There you go. Yeah, so back to, with the critical race theory, that's what we're calling it because it's actually a form of racism. It will be teaching our kids as young as kindergarten to start to identify who they are based on their family's ethnicity, and their color. There are specific national standards, which are the social justice standards, that use four different areas of identity, diversity, justice, and action within the standards. So the first one is identity. They're going to be teaching our students to look at who they are in terms of their family, their background, and the color of their skin. So they broke it into groups of K-2, K-3, 3-6, or 3-5, 6-8, and then 9-12, grades 9-12 standards. And it's a progression of how to identify. But what truly amazes me, and I'm going to read a couple of the standards within these national standards. So under identity...
Hold on a minute. For those of you who don't know, in education, standards are what drives education.
Perfect.
We have, teachers have to teach what's called standards. We don't teach just topics. We have standards that tell us what to teach. And then we have objectives under those telling us what must be achieved. So it's really important to listen to what these standards are, so, and then you can kind of guess at what objectives they're getting at.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm glad you said that, because with the standards, it's also the behaviors that students should be showing based on the skills and the objectives taught under these standards. So in the K-2 program, identity. I know and like who I am and can talk about my family and myself and name some of my group identities. And there's the key word, identities. You're talking a 5, 6, 7-year-old who cognitively really, number one, doesn't see color per se. They look at character of children. And they understand if a student is behaving nicely or being mean, etc. They're not really looking at their friends or their color yet in terms of I'm white, you're black, you're brown. The other thing with identity, what's also under the CRT is sexual identity. So some of the skills under the identities, and I've heard this in the schools here in my district, a first grade teacher asking first grade students to identify their pronouns. What do you feel like today? Are you feeling like you're a boy or a girl, both? You don't, if you ask any 5-year-old, I'm a boy, you're a girl, right?
Yeah.
So they're bringing in the sexual, the comprehensive sexuality standards also. Which is a whole other topic that you can get to at another time. But it's all under one umbrella. Under the diversity standard, I can describe some ways that I'm similar to and different from people who share my identities and those who have other identities. So there again, talking about I can identify colors.
This sounds really interesting. Other identities, are they, I mean, that almost hints that they're trying to get you to be mentally ill and have multiple personalities.
At kindergarten, yes, yes. This is a good one for justice, the justice standards. I know that life is easier for some people and harder for others, and the reasons for that are not always fair. That is kindergarten to first grade. Mm-hmm. And it goes on to give an example of what that might look like. So Joe notices that Stephen has chosen to play with a baby doll. Joe snatches the doll away from Stephen and saying, dolls are for girls, not boys. And then Anna comes along, notices, and tells the teacher. I'm a preschool teacher and primary teacher at heart. I'm just like, kids already tattle enough. Now we're going to be teaching them, you know, that, you know, starting to look and tattle because somebody says something or is looking, you know, doing something that they feel is racially or sexually different. I'm just perplexed. It continues to get, you know, increase as you go up the scale here in the standards. So like for grades 3 to 5, when you look at justice, I know that life is easier for some people, harder for others. based on who they are and where they are born. So it takes that next step. As well as it's important for me to stand up for myself and for others, and I know how to get help if I need ideas on how to do this.
That's a little scary.
It's very scary because another scenario there, it talks about a class discussing Cesar Chavez in the American labor movement at grades 3 to 5 and the injustices of the workers and not being protected overseas as they are here in the United States, and then having critical thinking and conversation activities within the classroom and with your family of how to improve these conditions for other countries.
What grade again is this?
Grades 3 to 5.
I wouldn't have addressed this until
high school.
Probably 11th grade.
Yes, high school. Exactly. So you can see already the progression and where cognitively it's being pushed down to a lower grade level where students are not totally aware. Now they're making them aware that these are injustices.
I don't here's my two cents on that. I don't think they have the cognitive ability, so this is rather brainwashing.
There you go. And that is, in a nutshell, what critical race theory is. It's brainwashing. It's based on the Marxist theory. And as you know, a Marxist theory is the beginning of going from capitalism to communism based on certain criteria. So right now we are looking at using Marxist ideas in order to brainwash our students based on race versus usually it's on economic or issues that have to do more with financial issues. Here we're doing it in the schools based on race.
And you know what's really disgusting is Rochester, New York is one of the first desegregated school districts in the country. Mm-hmm. It was the first one, I believe, in the country because of who lives here. And
Frederick Douglass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frederick Douglass was here. He was a prolific writer in the abolitionist movement. And
correct.
Us Northerners who, it's Rochester, New York, we were against slavery.
Slavery.
And we stood with him. My family was not here in Rochester at the time, but we were Northerners. My family's from the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you, to push this, in this historic place, if people turn over in their grave, I wouldn't doubt that the abolitionist who stood with him in Rochester, New York, would be turning over in their grave.
Yeah. I fully agree with you, because it's really also teaching them that there's race. Race is present in every aspect of our life, in every relationship and in every institution. And it's trying to get our students to recognize where that racism is across all aspects. And that's very scary because it really pulls away from Martin Luther King's ideals of, that we're not to be judged by the color of our skin, but by the character of each person. But here we're trying to say that we are inherently racist, and it defines the white people as the oppressors. I say that because here in Monroe County, there is I'm not going to call it a curriculum. It's a program that's being developed. It started in the fourth grade. Fourth graders across our district were taught what's called the FIRE program. And FIRE stands for Families Igniting Racial Equity. And then parts of it was piloted at grades 8 and 12. And this summer they're writing the activities and the the different components of this program for grades 2 through 12 and eventually include grades K through 12. And it's looking at the history of Rochester, New York, and the racism here in our city historically. So at fourth grade, it's talking more about the police and police racism and brutality within the police department historically, as well as redlining.
So, I'll bet you one thing they're not going to bring up is during the for the race riot that happened in 1964, I believe. I met the lawyer for the guy who was that this all started with. He's a white guy. They're not going to talk about how the white people and the black people work together to fight racism. They just so what do? Delete Martin Luther King and others from history? Martin Luther King Jr. and others from history?
That's what everybody's asking. Is Martin Luther King no longer honored and revered for what he did for the civil rights movement? Because we're not seeing that in any of the documentation or in any of the examples of the culturally responsive teaching framework, which is another framework of how to implement this diversity, equity, and inclusion grades K through 12 across the subject areas.
Can you quickly explain to I know these are teaching terms, but can you quickly explain what a framework is to an educator?
So a framework will give you basically now looking at each subject area of how to include the teachings of cultural diversity, inclusion, and equity, or CRT, into each of those subjects. And then the teachers will start to pull the skills and the topics together under that framework. So the framework that was released, the beginning framework that was released in April of this year by the Chancellor of New York is called the New York State Framework of Diversity, Equity, Inclusion, Call to Action. And it's an intro to the dangers of a single story, meaning our history, and the impact on systemic racism on the New York students.
Do they have a direction towards 11th grade or high school classrooms?
Yes, they have a complete. It's about a 64-page document with the framework K through with what it should look like and the different topics or vision within each. So, like, there's three visions for students to experience success. Students who are socio-politically conscious and socio-culturally responsive. And the third area is students who have a critical lens through which they challenge inequitable systems of access, power, and privilege. So we're looking at those three vision statements and bringing it in across the curriculum. So what
I'm going to interject here. I'm curious what they would have thought about us people who are white Anglo-Saxon Protestants who had no scholarships available because of our race, who had no grants available because of our race.
That is kind of included in their introduction to this framework, recognizing the percentage of whites, Hispanics, blacks, and Asians, or other ethnic backgrounds, based on the percentage of the poverty. So, what was really interesting, they quoted their percentages based on a USA Today article. And other information, they used the Washington Post. I'm just like, this is your documentation of why we're moving this way.
What's even worse is they're not. So education historically has when we talk about using sources. We talk about using primary sources and the great importance on it. That removes the scholarship angle from this, because those are not only secondary sources, they're hiding the primary sources that may or may not exist.
Exactly. As the true evidence. And I'm like, wow, New York, why didn't you just use Wikipedia? Was my first thought when I read, well, okay.
Makes me wonder, I would love, you may find it of value. I'd have to go back. I had at one point picked up, my suggestion is to go to the NCSS, National Council of Social Studies Teachers,
mm-hmm.
and look up the ethics statement, or in New York State, look for our ethics statement to see how CRT violates the required under law. Again, this is the New York State one, is under law. We all must obey this code of ethics. So the concept of teaching these things orders teachers, at least in New York State, to violate the code of ethics. And the National Council of Social Studies Teachers, I'm going to pick on particularly because I do know this, what we're teaching in this, I say I'm retired, so I can't say we, what they're requiring social studies teachers to teach will order them to violate that code of ethics. So I'm sure there's something with English teachers as well that you could find. I think that is a major point to push.
I wonder, though, if nationally they're not changing it also.
I don't believe they've thought about that, because to put it otherwise, they have to say that there has to be a statement against teaching or allowing. There was a statement about, you know, being culturally sensitive, and, you know, even if they put racially sensitive or whatever, you know, teaching a culturally racially sensitive curriculum, that doesn't mean you're allowed to teach kids to be prejudiced. It tells you you're not allowed to. And once you start teaching this, you are violating that code of ethics. So I think that's I'm glad I'm having this conversation.
We're going to have to go back and research it.
I can probably pull up some of those for you, because I had to pull them up for some research I was doing a little ways back.
Because it will be interesting to see if that's slowly starting to change also. Because I know here in New York, there are currently, there's two for each of the professional development and culturally responsive instruction. There's two bills that are being talked about in committee. So there's S06892, which requires the Department of Education to establish professional development programs in culturally responsive instruction and provide access to those programs on the New York State website, as well as requiring comprehensive sexuality instruction for students in grades K through 12. Just a little overview of the comprehensive sexuality instruction. That is a global program of teaching sexuality to all of our students. It was proposed within the United Nations not too long ago, whereas at the United Nations level in committee, they opted not to adopt those standards and program globally, but they have allowed individual countries to adopt that instruction. The United States, Mexico, Canada have accepted to teach comprehensive sexuality.
For those of you who do not know, this is not the first UN document that has been pushed into education. Goals 2000 was the first UN push into United States education system, and that was pushed, guess again, under George Bush, George Bush Sr. So please understand, people thought Goals 2000 was a big thing. It was a push by the United Nations that was approved to push into, that's one of the reasons why back when I started, I was still in college or somewhere around there. It's not college, but doing my master's work at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good point. Yeah. And then the final one is establishing culturally responsive education curriculum and standards for all school districts, charter schools, and private schools to integrate throughout all areas of education at all grade levels. So that they're trying to make it become law and mandated here in New York State to infuse CRT across all subject areas.
So you did, you said something else that I think people are going to miss. So if you're a Christian school, will you be mandated to teach this curriculum?
Yes.
What will happen if you do not?
I have no idea what will happen, because I do know that some Christian and private schools receive public funding, especially for transportation. A little clip that I read from New York State Ed Department that funding would be taken away.
That's what I'm getting at. They need to understand, if they want to take, private schools need to understand that if they're going to teach this curriculum, they're going to be teaching unbiblical Christian, unbiblical, in fact, anti-biblical stuff. They are going to be teaching each other, their children, to be racists.
They're going to be teaching that there's more than female and male.
Yeah.
They're going to be taught in the comprehensive sexuality curriculum. They're taught that there's more than just a man and a woman and mom and dad and a family. And they talk about and they teach all the different types of moms and dads and different types of marriages in love that can happen. So it does take away any of our Christian values, morals, and understanding of what is the Word of God.
So it sounds like they are actually, by taking down the private schools, they are forbidding, they are forbidding the teaching of Christian or Judeo-Christian beliefs.
It will be in there, but it will be alongside everything else, because going back to those initial standards, that you know your identity and who your family is, and that we accept all types of families. Because there is one more bill that I can throw at you here that's in committee right now. It relates to culturally responsive lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender education standards. I don't know what that will look like yet. And also requiring all of our librarians to take professional development in order to implement culturally responsive education through books and media.
Wow. I don't know about you when you were a child, but I actually devoured the elementary school's library. I read everything in it.
Me too.
I love to read, and my mother was a teacher, so I read at an early age. And I can't imagine my child coming home with a book from a school library as something that I would never permit them to read. And that's wow.
This is where parents need to be aware. Because a lot of times, it's no longer a physical book. Most kids now have a school-issued device. And on that device, there is an app that's connected to a library app. So here in my town, in my district, they have an app called Sora, S-O-R-A. And when the child clicks on Sora, the media app, it opens up and it gives recommendations of appropriate books for read alouds or to read for that age or grade level of a student. And the student could check it out of the library if they want. Right there, they can check things out, or they can download it and listen to it or read it on their device, like a Kindle. So for the month of June, right now being Pride Month, many parents are reporting to me, as young as first grade, what is popping up are books on Pride Month. Books on you know, and little videos, et cetera, because we've all heard about the Drag Queen Library Hour and those type of things. So those type of books are popping up for these kids. Many parents are just telling their kids, do not open that app. You are prohibited from opening that app. But you dig a little bit deeper, not even dig. You know, you just go on. And all the recommendations parents are telling me, BLM, racism, history, historical racist history. It's they're being inundated in every sense of the word, in every area, no matter where you look.
I had not even thought about, yeah, you're right. I'm going to pick on the city schools. I'm not sure about in suburbia, because that's not where I've worked, but in city schools, we have been giving out electronic devices for free. We're talking about laptops or Chromebooks or things like that.
Yes.
And I want you to think about your child coming home, going online. You're not home because, you know, you're working, you're finishing your hours, and what are they doing? They say they're doing their homework. They're online, and the concept disgusts me to think that I couldn't. I'm thankful my kids are grown, let me put it that way.
But that's why I'm right now in this fight. My kids are grown. I do not have any grandchildren. But as an educator and a taxpayer, as well as a Christian, this has to be stopped. This is not right, what we are doing. And it's going to take our generation, because our generation remembers what our parents' generation did. And my parents both were in the Army for World War II. My dad was a replacement troop in Normandy, and my mom was a WAC, Women's Army Corps. And right after the war ended, she went to Germany, and she was part of all the work of the trials in Germany. And my dad re-enlisted since there wasn't any work after the market was flooded here. And he was a teletypist for the Nuremberg trials. And they always raised us, this will never happen again to our country or to our world. And we need to make sure that this is not happening. And it is. So what is our generation going to do to support the parents and the kids of this generation and the next generation? Because if they get this generation, we've lost our country. They already have won.
Wow. With that, I want to say thank you, because I think that what you just said is the most important thing we need to take from this. If we have to fight, and we can't give up, and we can't allow this to happen. So thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome. I do want to suggest, though, anybody that is listening, you need to go to your school board meetings. You have to be the voice. We have to do a grassroots effort on this. The more people that show up, the more they're going to listen. The more in the face we are, hopefully over time, we are going to change this. You can see what's happening down in Londonville and Virginia right now. Parents by the hundreds are gathering and forcing, and hopefully it will correct.
For those who are not aware, there was 250 parents who showed up in Loudonville. 52 were exactly allowed to speak. The persons who were running the meeting left the meeting, and then the school superintendent declared it an unlawful assembly, and had the rest of the people who stayed and did not leave were threatened with arrest. Two people were arrested for practicing their constitutional right of assembly.
Have a voice.
So I do have one more important question to you before I think it's one of the reasons why you're here too. If you don't think you know enough to, and you need to know more about CRT, what would you tell them?
Oh, it's everywhere. I would say go to your district website first. See how obvious it is on your district website. You will probably find, first of all, a new department called either Diversity and Equity or Diversity, Equity and Inclusion or Culturally Responsive Education. And you will see that districts have now hired assistant superintendents or directors to implement this in the districts to get teachers prepared through conversations and studies. Here in my district, I know they've been reading How to Be an Anti-Racist by Ibram X, as well as White Fragility, Why It's Hard for Whites to Talk About Racism by Robin DiAngelo. Those are two books, and they're indoctrination in order to get teachers to understand that this is a good thing, that this is what they need to do.
Wow.
But go and start researching, because the fire program is pretty much has been adopted across Monroe County and just about every district now.
Thank you, Jennifer.
You're welcome.
God bless you. Keep the
fight. Thank you. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. For those of you listening on Blog Talk Radio, I'm still waiting for the video to catch up. So hold on a few seconds. We're getting there. This is a shocking, shocking piece. And I think it's important to listen to what Jennifer said about these apps that are coming home from school. On the devices kids are being sent home with, their computers, their laptops. What are they accessing there? That kind of blew my mind. But this stuff with CRT is the most un-American, most despicable communist curriculum I've ever, it was just hard for me to accept. And I think I have, shouldn't. Trying to see how much time I have left on this one in the video, and should be short. I'm just totally shocked that some of these things were actually taught and stuff. They are set to be taught here in Problem I Have. It is mandated, and then our local superintendents all agreed to it without your consent, without the Board of Education's consent. The school district superintendents all agreed to teach this in Monroe County, New York State. Now, this is probably what happened in your area. You were not invited to get a choice on whether this is being taught. It's just going to be taught. The despicable, immoral acts of these superintendents, ungodly. These are people who have no morals. I can't say anything nice about people who would agree to teach racist curriculum, regardless of who it's against. Racism is racism, and whether it's against white, black, whatever, it is racism. And I will fight against that in any form. So I apologize for the video being a little bit slower than I thought. I'm curious if somehow the audio on BTR got cut, and unless this should be cutting soon, and we're about there. I still have to say, I was totally, totally shocked when I did this interview. Jennifer is highly informed. What we are doing is forming groups here to go around to your local school districts and just show up with signs. And we are showing, that is the cool thing. We're just showing up. And we're almost there. When you think about it, sometimes all you have to do is appear. You have to show up and be there. Sometimes just your presence is all that matters. So if you can show up to a school board, bring a sign. CRT is racist. It promotes socialism. And signs about the LGBTQ, whatever you want to add, whatever alphabet soup letters you want to add to that, that's important. just show up with a sign that this is not something you endorse. That is what's happening locally. It's big. I wish I could get more people online to get this. Now, just for your pleasure and for your ability to share this out with your local preacher, pastor, politician, school board, this is now available. This interview is now available on YouTube and the Sutliffian Report channel. If you go there, I'm just going to ask that you subscribe to the channel. This is free for you. Share it out. If you want Jennifer or me to talk to you, contact me through Facebook, through LinkedIn. I don't really do Twitter, so please don't try that. For those of you who look hard, you can probably find my email. Send me anything you want for questions. I will send them to Jennifer. I'm not going to give out her contact information, but I will forward any questions or desires to talk with her or straight to her. She was incredible, straightforward, honest, and I wish we could do more. My goal was to get this out to pastors. So the first thing I did is I actually sent this video out to 100 pastors in New York State. Here we go. Oh, wow. We're almost there. I'm surprised that video was so far behind. I haven't had that show up before. The terms I want to remember to keep talking about, some places, they will actually hide what they're teaching. They will say they're not teaching critical race theory, but yet they have a Department of Diversity and Equity, which requires the same curriculum. So they are playing with words. So if your district has something called diversity and equity in it, they're teaching CRT in your school. So you have to be the one to do the research, to find this out, because they do not want you to know. It is despicable that they are hiding this from you. It is despicable and beyond belief that they dare to do this without your permission. And it is happening. It's not a question. It is happening. I wish I could change things. I wish I could just walk in and say, why are you lying to the parents? Unfortunately, that's not happening. All right. And I am just going to cut with a video feed on the other one and just put this in. Here we go. All right. So now we're back live in both places. I just got to unmute myself in the other place. All right. So now we're back live in both places. The joy of trying to do two things at once. It is never easy, and it should not always be hard, but for someone who was looking for somebody else, sometimes it is. Again, remember, this is the United States, the country where children should be saying the Pledge of Allegiance every day in school. That contradicts what CRT is all about. For those of you who have forgotten, this here is John Wayne's rendition of CRT. Now, I want to say that, rendition of the pledge. I mean, John Wayne, I want you to think about that. John Wayne, he's everybody's favorite cow. At least he was my favorite cowboy. One of the most, I'm just going to play this. I want you to think about the pledge. Now, Vito and Al, who are part of BTR, who are basically lead BTR, Global Patriot Radio, play this a lot on their show. So this is relatively short, but think about this. How does this negate everything diversity and equity teaches, or CRT, critical race theory?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
What do those words mean to you? To me, they say, thank you, America, for your strength, your courage, and for our freedom, which is been a beacon to the world for 200 years.
Of the United States of America.
Whose bright stars are 50 states, each bearing its own stamp of individuality. People, 200 million strong. People who have come to her from all corners of the earth.
And to the republic for which it stands.
A land of laws. An ingenious system of checks and balances that allows no man to become a tyrant and lets no group prevail if their power is not tempered with a real concern for the governed. A land where the right of dissent and of free speech is jealously guarded, where the ballot box is the sword and the people its wielder.
One nation under God.
A land where freedom of worship is a cornerstone of her being. A land graced with temples and churches, synagogues and altars that rise in profusion to embrace all the religions of the world.
Indivisible.
A land forged by the hot steel of raw courage, conformed forever by the awful crucible of civil war.
With liberty.
Where man, in pursuit of an honest life, will not be denied his chance. Where her citizens move freely within her vast borders without hindrance or fear. A land brimming with opportunity, where freedom of choice is the guideline for all.
And justice.
The courts of our land are open to all. Its wheels of justice grind for all causes, all people. They look to every avenue for justice, every concern of the law. And they temper their reasoning with mercy for all.
Thank you for waiting patiently and listening. It's shocking. It is truly shocking that we have It is truly shocking that we live in a country where we have to be reminded of what our freedoms mean. What is crazy is that in this country, we have educators who are going, have volunteered to force their teachers to teach racism, how to be racist in the schools. And then the Union of Teachers this week, this is an organization I was not willingly part of. But because I was a teacher in a teachers union, this organization is the largest union of teachers. It's called the National Education Association. And if there was any way I could today encourage teachers to withdraw and all unions within the United States to withdraw any financing of it, I would. The National Education Association, which, again, if you have a child in a public school and in some private schools and in some colleges and some universities, most all are connected. Most all of the teachers, professors are connected to an entity called the National Education Association. It seems to have forgotten the purpose of their existence as the largest teacher union in the United States. Why do I say that? They're now promoting anti-Semitism. And it is disgusting. Alex Nexter and Matthew Foldy of the Washington Free Beacon put this article out. And I have to say, as I read it the first time, I was shocked and horrified. So please expect to be that way. I am disgusted. I am truly disgusted that this is happening. Some things should be horrifying to the average person. It should be that way. Why? Because they should horrify you to think that the largest educator association in the United States would do this. Now, the headline is, Nation's largest teacher union will debate a resolution accusing Israel of ethnic cleansing. Why is this even a question? Because the National Education Association has decided that its goal is social justice, not teaching your children. Think about that. This article came out yesterday. The nation's largest teachers union will debate two resolutions aimed at boycotting Israel. And did you catch that? This is an ally of the United States of America. And recognizing a Palestinian state, which doesn't exist. There is no country called Palestine. At a conference this week, National Education Association will take up the proposals at their multi-day annual meeting, which is set to begin Wednesday. One measure calls on the United States to cut material support and funding to Israel. Another would have the union promote Palestinian causes through a variety of programs at an estimated cost of $71,500. Again, Palestinian causes, what are they? Let's think about that. Throwing rockets at Israel? Thousands of rockets? Wait a minute, where'd that money come from? If you want to throw money at Palestine, what are they spending the money on? They are paying people to kill Jews. And if you kill Jews and you die, they pay your family. Oh, good reason. Isn't that paying for murder? Yeah, it is. Isn't that what we call contract murder? Yes, it is. But the teachers union think that's okay, so they want to accuse Israel of, yeah. It is just disgusting. The teachers union across the country have come out against Israel in recent, and Jews, you're catching this, recent month. Three local unions affiliated with the American Federation of Teachers, the country's second largest teacher union, AFT, passed statements in June condemning Israel as an apartheid state. How can they be an apartheid state if you could have Muslims in parliament in their country? It is not an apartheid state. This is the insanity of it. These people who write this stuff and teach this stuff are ignorant cusses, and they're running our country. They're running the union. This is scary. Caters. National Educators Association, speaking from ignorance. If this isn't a reason that I've heard, a good enough reason for people to pull their children out of public schools, I don't know what is. You know, I've been against that. I have been against that for a long, long time. My own children went through public schools. But the fact that they are going to promote anti-Semitism out of the teachers' largest unions, what does it say about the educators themselves? How can Christians be a part of this union? I don't know. Even AFT, and the biggest problem I have with that is I believe that you absolutely, as an educator, you have to have a union, because principals will think of themselves as gods and treat you like dirt. That happens. But these larger organizations serve no valued purpose except to create a larger bureaucracy. And to think that they are going to fight and create more hate, I'm going to read a statement, and it's in this. It says, over the past 15 months, students across the country have been shut out of schools, creating learning deficits that will haunt our kids for a generation. Nicole Neely, the president of Parents Defending Education, told the Washington Free Beacon, NEA's inflammatory and divisive fixation on political issues is further proof that the education of America's students isn't a priority for the union. Neely said, my heart goes out to the Jewish members of the NEA whose union dues are being used to promote anti-Semitic lies about Jews in Israel. Well, it's not only against Jews, it's against Christians, because Jesus was Jewish. But that's okay. The majority of the people who lead NEA are not Christian. They are not Jewish. They are more likely atheist. Oh, more likely communist. Guess what? No money from NEA will ever, or their support goes to support any Republican. Just how fair is that? That they consider themselves unbiased and all this. Yeah. So I'm telling you, they spend money. You'll say, well, we'll endorse a Republican, but they won't give them a dime. I've been watching that happen in New York State. Some of these things, shocking. But again, the fact that they would promote hate, I never would have thought of this. But guess that's what CRT does. In fact, it considers Jews white. The funny thing about that is the Democratic Party's KKK did not consider Jews white. But now they are, so because it's okay to hate Jews. Oh, it's okay to hate whites. Oh, wow. Wow. Again, the Democratic Party was the owner of the KKK. They created it. Tell you how many inner city kids are shocked when they hear that, because their parents are members of the Democratic Party. Why would their parents be members of this? They think, oh, this is crazy. It can't be true. And then when they hear it's true, they don't know what to do. Well, it's because you don't have enough people telling you the truth. And that's why entities like Global Patriot Radio exist. It's why I'm here, to get the truth out. It's utterly, utterly, utterly shocking. Now, I have another shocking video for you that I heard early this week, and I think it's extremely important to get out. Dr. McCullough this week put out a video with Vlad Tepes' blog. You can find it on 3Speak online. I cannot put it on. I'm not going to put it on my YouTube. But I want to say this. I've been listening to an increasing pushing amount of people, pushing people to be vaccinated. And they're looking, you know, and they're upset with where people that are actually looking at VAERS data. Facebook has actually covered up several of my spaces, things that I share about VAERS data, saying it's false. Excuse me, it's reported by the CDC. I got it off that site, but that's okay. They hate that. They hate the idea that you're sharing the truth. But Dr. McCullough, who is an internist, a cardiologist, and an academic, shared something that is so shocking. I can't even express how shocking it is. So I am going to put this out in just a second. I'm going to put the video in first. There are going to be a little blank spot from Blog Talk Radio. There's going to be a few blank spots where questions are asked. And I'm not going to be able to get those, what the questions are. But if you listen, it'll be a little bit surprising. The responses will shock you. I wish I could tell you more, but this, I have to say, this video, again, incredibly, incredibly shocking, appalling, and I don't know what else to tell you besides that. And here we go.
I'm Dr. Peter McCullough, and I'm an internist and cardiologist and academic physician, professor of medicine at Texas A&M College of Medicine on the Baylor Dallas campus. I think this whole pandemic from the beginning was about the vaccine. So I think all roads lead to the vaccine and what it means. There are already places in Southeast Asia and Europe, they're laying the groundwork for a compulsory vaccination. I mean compulsory. That means somebody pins you down to the ground and puts a needle in you. That's how bad stakeholders want vaccination. Listen, that's not of cost. You don't have to pay for it. It's all provided. There are people or stakeholders, they do want a needle in every arm. This needle in every arm is a very important moniker. Why? Why do you want a needle in an arm? Let's take COVID recovered. Can't get the virus. Can't receive it. It has nothing to do. Why would they ever want a needle in the arm of a COVID recovered patient? Why? Three studies show higher safety events. See, the tension that Americans are feeling right now as they're trying to keep their jobs and go to work is they know they can die of the vaccine. That's the problem. If the vaccine was like water and you just got it, no side effects, who wouldn't take it? Say, hey, I'll comply. They got my Social Security number anyway in a database. I'm already marked. I'll just get marked. But no, there's something very unique about this vaccine. It's something about injecting something into a body that is so important to stakeholders that it doesn't matter. Kids 12 years old told they can make their own decision on this, and it could be their fatal decision. Think about that. North Carolina just passed that. Oh, kids 12 years old can decide on their own. There are over 4,000 dead Americans. There's over 10,000 dead people in Europe that die on days 1, 2, and 3 after the vaccine. Why are we pushing this in a way where people's jobs and their education and their livelihood decide on a decision that's potentially fatal? The tension, you can cut it with a knife. There are parents that say, listen, I want my kid to go to college this year, but I don't want to lose him to the vaccine. They know what's going on. The internet is full of these cases. Blood clots, strokes, immediate death. Now, I'm fortunate. I have not directly lost a patient to the vaccine. I told you, most got vaccinated in December, January, February. Based on the safety data now, I can no longer recommend it. I can't recommend it. It's passed all the thresholds to being a safe product. It's not a safe product. None of them are. It's not just Johnson & Johnson. In fact, more of the safety events in the United States have occurred with Moderna and Pfizer. There are now papers written by prominent scientists calling for a worldwide halt in the program. There are prominent virologists, many of them, including Nobel Prize winners, who have said, listen, if we vaccinate people and we create a very narrow, incomplete library of immunity, which is what the vaccine is, the vaccines are all targeted to the original Wuhan spike protein, which is long gone. That's extinct. Patients are getting vaccinated to something that doesn't even exist anymore. That Wuhan spike protein is gone. We're hoping the immunity covers the other variants. But that narrow immunity is a setup. It's just like giving everybody a narrow spectrum antibiotic. If you did that, what would happen? We grow up superbugs. There are warnings out there saying don't do this. Don't vaccinate the entire world. All we're going to do is set ourselves up for a superbug that's going to really wipe out populations. So for many reasons, the vaccine, indiscriminate vaccination, is a horrendous idea. It's a horrendous bioweapon that's been thrust onto the public. And it's going to cause great personal harm, which it already has. Thousands of people have lost their lives. I've never lost a direct patient, but I've had my patients lose their family members, lots of them. I've filled out a safety report on a patient who developed blood clots after one of the Pfizer Moderna vaccine. And I'm telling you, it took half an hour to do it. There was many pages, and each page said, warning, federal offense, punishable by severe fines and penalties if I falsified a report. All those thousands of Americans that have died with the vaccine and hospitalizations in the database, I think, are real. And they are far beyond anything we've ever seen. And as a doctor and as a public citizen, I am extraordinarily concerned about the vaccine. The vaccine center right down the street here is empty. I drive past it every day. Americans know. They're talking to each other. The vaccine's not safe. And now the effort is the vaccine stakeholders want kids without parental guidance, and now they want to be in the church. Americans and people worldwide should be extraordinarily alarmed. I think it's about what the vaccine means. And Whitney Webb gets credit for this. Back in April, she said, aha, I figured this out. This is what globalists have been waiting for. They've been waiting for a way of marking people, that you get in a vaccine, you're marked in a database. And this can be used for trade, for commerce, for behavior modification, all different purposes. And you've seen it right here in Dallas. They've announced, you can't go to a Dallas Mavericks game unless you're vaccinated. You've had people say, listen, you have passports. You had colleges today announce that they're not going to give any credit to natural immunity. Every scientist in the world knows that the natural immunity is way better than the vaccine immunity. If it's about COVID, why don't we have COVID recovered go to the Mavericks games? Why don't we have COVID recovered people freely go to college? Well, why do we have to have faulty vaccine immunity be the priority and have natural immunity not count? See, these types of things make me think that Whitney Webb is correct. This is actually about marking. The vaccine is a way of marking people. It's a way of starting to assert efforts to create compliance, behavior control. Don't forget, the vaccine is just a starter. Now there's going to be updates. There's going to be boosters. They're already prepping people for this. There's going to be more. The vaccine manufacturers are all linked. They're all uniquely indemnified. What medical product is there indemnification where something happens to you, you don't have any recourse? You know, a woman gets vaccinated, a pregnant woman. She has no maternal fetal rights. Something happens to her or her baby. She's out of luck. This is extraordinary what Americans are doing. It's absolutely extraordinary what's being thrust upon us now. Well, U.S. FDA regulatory guidance on vaccines, and there have been modern vaccines. You don't have to pick the old ones. I mean, we've had modern vaccines, shingles vaccines, hepatitis B, meningococcal vaccines, demand a minimum of 2 years of safety data. 2 years by regulatory. In fact, these are kind of written and codified into the regulatory rules for the manufacturers. That was all thrown out and said 2 months. For COVID, 2 months. So 2 months of observational data. This idea that we could vaccinate people that were not even tested in the trials, that has never been done before. We have never just thrown a vaccine at somebody without having any data, none. So the very first pregnant woman that was vaccinated here in the United States, it was done with no knowledge of safety and no knowledge of efficacy. And the argument that we've heard is, well, COVID-19 is a bad illness. 600,000 people have died. The vaccine could help them. We should give it a shot. Come on, we should just give it a shot. Well, that 600,000 died. I've already told you 85% of that was preventable with early treatment, which was actively suppressed and squashed. And not only that, is if this vaccine can help them, the vaccine better be safe. It better be safe. And my comments on the vaccine are safety, safety, safety. Let's see it. Let's see it. And Americans ought, just like the Americans should have been getting weekly updates on treatment innovations, Americans should have been getting weekly updates on vaccine safety. Very important. Weekly updates from our federal officials on safety. Super important. Those two things are probably the two largest acts of malfeasance in all of medical regulatory history. It will go down in history of malfeasance, wrongdoing by those of authority. How come there was no updates on treatment and no promotion of early treatment to reduce hospitalization and death? And now when we release the vaccine, why are there no safety updates? Why are there no attempts for risk mitigation in terms of making the vaccine program safer? How do we have all these vaccines? How do we know we can vaccinate pregnant women? We know because of years and years and years of safety data. Before a vaccine has ever been injected into a pregnant woman, it's probably been tested for decades before we try it in a pregnant woman. We would never out of the box take a brand new technology that's never been tested before, ever. And we know that the vaccine technology produces the dangerous spike protein. It produced the Wuhan spike protein, the spicule on the ball of the virus itself, which damages blood vessels and causes blood clotting, and all of them do. We would never unleash that into a pregnant woman's body. Americans have to understand something is very wrong what's going on. What's going on now in the world, these are examples, are clear-cut examples of wrongdoing that is at such a high level. The groupthink is in the wrong direction in such a consistent and overwhelming way that people are being harmed in an extraordinary fashion. To make the problem worse than what it is, many methods to make the case count look higher than what it is, make the mortality numbers look worse than what they are. Many methods to create the reaction out of proportion to the reality, so lockdowns, fears, economic suffering, what have you. All of these things making the pandemic way worse than what it is, okay, to have that occur. More fear, suffering, hospitalization, death, loneliness, lockdown, in order to promote mass vaccination. These two are tightly linked. Now, mass vaccination at all costs, the world must be mass vaccinated. And human beings on Earth ought to understand at this point in time, what we're seeing is unprecedented. It became known the virus was going to be amenable to a vaccine somewhere around April, May. And at that point in time, therapy was suppressed. Everything, nothing could be published. Everything, the fake Lancet paper, squash treatment, and then prepare the population for vaccination. Once the vaccines come out, they're short-tracked. There's all kinds of enthusiasm regarding it, needles in all the arms, trucks rolling, Americans cheering, and then the mass vaccination program starts off. And then before we know it, we're vaccinating pregnant women. Why are we doing that? That can't be safe. Now we're going to vaccinate COVID recovery patients. Wait a minute. They have complete and robust permanent immunity. No one's ever challenged the immunity of a COVID recovery patient. Why are we vaccinating them? And then it keeps going and going. At first, we vaccinated high-risk people. I didn't really understand vaccinating young healthcare workers because they weren't at risk. There were never any hospital outbreaks in the United States. The only thing that was clear, nursing home workers gave it to nursing home patients. We knew that. So nursing home workers should have been vaccinated. And then maybe high-risk people, and we should call it a day. I always estimated maybe 20 million people need to be vaccinated. But that didn't seem to satisfy the vaccine stakeholders, which are Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, AstraZeneca, and any others that come forward, the CDC, the FDA, and the NIH, and the White House. Massive vaccine stakeholders. You could throw in Gates Foundation, World Health Organization. You could throw those in as well. Massive stakeholders, and they wanted everybody to be vaccinated without exception. No one will escape the needle. We've actually never had this before. And the vaccine process is extraordinary. There's a consent form. It says this is investigational. We don't know if it's going to work. There's only 2 months of data. The side effects could be a sore arm all the way to death, and we don't know. Sign here. We need your identifying information. We need a barcode on the vial. We need you identified, and now you're in a database. You're vaccinated. And so this mass vaccination is extraordinarily concerning. We never vaccinate into the middle of a pandemic, never. We've never had an effective vaccine for respiratory virus, including influenza. It's only modestly effective. We knew from the published data that the attack rates in placebo and the vaccine arms were less than 1%. So we know that the vaccine can have a less than 1% effect in the population. Why would it be any different than the clinical trials? We knew from the clinical trials that it didn't stop COVID-19, so people can get COVID-19 anyway. What would be this incredible drive to vaccinate everybody? And now, oh my Lord, now the vaccine within a few months has been completely weaponized. Now travel is related to the vaccine. People can't go to school without the vaccine. People are losing their jobs without the vaccine. Believe me, there is something very, very potent in this vaccine. It should be disturbing to everybody. The word vaccine ought to be the most disturbing word that they have seen. Now we have 12-year-old children who are told they can decide on their own whether or not they could take a vaccine. So, about 70% of my patients are vaccinated. I'm very pro-vaccine. I've taken all the vaccines myself, about 70%, and they were all vaccinated in December, January, and February. But as we sit here today in May, we have over 4,000 vaccine-related deaths and over 10,000 hospitalizations. The limit to shut down a program is about 25 to 50 deaths. Swine flu, 1976, 25 deaths, they shut down the program. It's not safe. All the vaccines in the United States per year, what ambulantly gets reported in the database is about 200. And we're talking about vaccinating probably 500 million injections. Here in the United States, at 100 million people vaccinated, this is far and away the most lethal, toxic, biologic agent ever injected into a human body in American history. And it's going strong, with no mention of safety by our officials, with wild enthusiasm by our hospitals and hospital administrators, with doctors supporting it. Doctors are saying now they won't see patients in their waiting room without the vaccine. This problem, COVID-19, was actually from the very beginning. That's what Whitney Webb said. She goes, COVID-19 is actually about the vaccine. It's not about the virus. It's about the vaccine.
So has any agency tried to threaten or intimidate you?
My personal situation, professional situation, is a position of strength. And those who've attempted in any way to pressure, coerce, or threaten me with reprisal have paid an extraordinary price. And I think that's an important message to get out there. There is a position of strength based on principles of compassionate care and of the Hippocratic Oath and of the fiduciary relationship that a doctor has to a patient and a prominent doctor has to a population that supersedes all of those other ill intents. And what I say is, bring them on.
And going back, and we are going live again with both, and the joy of getting things right and getting back into the video. Okay. Come on. Trying to get things right, I said. Come on. Here we go. Okay. Joy, joy, joy. Trying to get things right. Okay. I have to say that was a shocking video. There's more. And I have to say, if you want to find some great stuff, Vlad has it at 3speak.online. It's either at Rare Foundation or you can find it at Vlad Tepe's blog. His work is outstanding. He had millions of subscribers on YouTube till they decided that his news that he shared was considered porn. It was porn. It was called porn so they could kick him off. We have another outstanding person down in Central America today. It's Todd Benzman, one of our regular guests. He's down there watching the extracontinental human trafficking towards the United States border. Today, his second article came out. It's a doozy. However, I am running down out of time. And I'm just going to tell you, please, please go to CIS.org, look for Benzman's two articles on United Nations mass illegal immigration. Each one is powerful in its own right and shocking and scary. Please, please do go and read this. It will, if you are a believer that there's no such thing as a border crisis, when you read his reporting, I think you'll be surprised. Going on, let's talk about eBay and its promotion of Hezbollah. Something, you know, you would not think, an organization that says, oh, they don't promote hate things. But yeah, that's happening. eBay is okay with selling things that support a declared terrorist entity. So this comes from Israeli Cool by David Lang. Came out last week, and I'm sorry I missed it. eBay's disgraceful response to person who complained about Hezbollah items being sold. In January this year, reader Craig noticed that an eBay seller named Retan Store was selling Hezbollah items. Things like patches, flags, and hats that glorify the anti-Semitic Islamic terrorist group. You can go there and find it out. I recommend going to the Israeli Cool site and taking a look at this. Hezbollah are on the State Department's list of designated terrorist organizations, and Retan Store is located in Retan, Washington, So selling these items is illegal. While these items are banned under eBay's prohibited items hate groups, Craigslist speculated that the seller appeared to be getting around the ban by putting Syria War, Shia Islam, in the title instead of the actual name of the terror group. But despite Craig's constant complaints to eBay, they didn't act. Well, actually, it's not entirely true. They did do something. Yesterday, Craig asked eBay why they still hadn't removed the items. They replied with a standard canned response. eBay, the dog days of summer are here. Oops. Okay. So he writes, please remove the anti-Semitic flags and posters being sold by an eBay member called Retin Store. They have been reported multiple times going on 6 months. What do you think eBay said in response? Oh, so here's another one. Again, why are you allowing anti-Semitic materials on your website? Retin Store has been selling items that promote and perpetuate and glorify hatred, violence, or discrimination, including on the graces of race, on the grounds of race, ethnicity, color, and religion. You've known about it for 6 months. So here's what they write back. Thanks for reaching out to us about this. We are about making sure eBay is a safe place to buy and sell. To learn more on how you can report a seller, visit the report and issue seller with a seller. Oh, wait a minute. Again, they're not, they don't, I mean, a canned response, so they can't possibly do things. So this day, Craig reached a search for eBay on Instagram. Nothing showed up. He then searched on Google and found it. But when he clicked on the account, he was blocked from seeing any posts. So, yeah. Interesting. They're keeping him from sharing what's happening. I'm just, they banned Craig from their Twitter page because he asked the wrong question. This disgraceful response from eBay, one which needs to be exposed. So, you know, please help report them for what they're doing. I would say call the State Department and report them. Call the FBI and report them. You can do that. There are ways to report them. This is against the law. It is illegal. So, again, you want to stop hate speech and stuff being done like this? Report it. Next up, we have something happened in Germany this past week. We had a massive stabbing last week where a guy yelling Allah Akbar stabbed, I believe, 8 people. 3 immediately died as a result. And now there were another 5 or 6 who were stabbed that had not yet died. They were severely injured. There was another 1 or 2 that had died later. I can't remember the exact numbers. But on top of that, this Monday, a Muslim migrant, another one in Germany, another one was threatening children with a machete and a knife. Guess what? It was a Muslim migrant. And here he is yelling Allah Akbar and threatening children in Dresden with a machete. Anybody surprised that it's a Muslim migrant to begin with? Well, he's yelling out Akbar. Well, that kind of says it. But so this is by Bernard Schiltz. Again, it's from Bild. It says, terrible scenes on Monday evening at about 9:15 p.m. in the Gorbitz residential area in Dresden. According to police, an Eritrean is said to have threatened children with a machete and knife. Amazingly enough, an Iraqi intervened and prevented worse. Police spokesman Marco Laske, the suspect, is said to have shouted Allah Akbar, God is greater, in order to clarify whether a political motive was involved. What do you mean? Islam is not separate from politics, you idiots. When are you going to grow up and do your research and find out? Yes, that is connected. That is a political statement. It can't be separated from politics. So the Iraqi watch, catch this now. The Iraqi watched the children being harassed, bravely threw himself at the machete man, and was injured in the leg in the process. A cut wound later had to be treated at an outpatient basis. Another passerby alerted the police. Eritrean, who is already known to the police for crimes of bodily harm, initially fled the scene. Police officers were able to find the suspect on Lismai Minor and Strauss, said the spokesman. The man provisionally was arrested. A breath alcohol test on the 25-year-old showed a value. He got caught. As a Muslim, he was found to be drinking. Well, if you're committing an act of jihad, that is one of the allowances you're allowed to do. You're not supposed to. However, again, you're not supposed to drink alcohol as a Muslim, but some things are allowed to when you're on jihad. So keep this in mind. I mean, this is, yeah, you're catching it. I mean, Muhammad didn't want anyone, didn't want anybody doing these things. But again, they are allowing these things when you're on jihad. So if you think that's interesting, we're still in Germany. And the next thing that next article I have is about an imam who questioned the requirements of a hijab on women. So, I mean, he's just saying, you know, maybe women shouldn't have that requirement. He really questioned that and a few other things. Now, as I have said before, one of the things Al-Qaeda calls about this, they consider the discussion or the war for the, they consider this a war for the hijab. And they, this is Al-Qaeda saying this, that the push for the hijab is a war that the Muslims should be engaged in. Oh, well, here's this Muslim saying, well, maybe we shouldn't be doing that. So what do? They take away his ability to teach. They revoke his license. Now, DW.com has it. The article says, it's titled, German Islamic Teacher's License Revoked for Being Too Liberal. Abdel Hakim Urgi has written books, including You Don't Have to Wear a Headscarf and Reform Islam, 40 Theses. His application to train other Islamic teachers was turned down for vague reasons. A German Islamic scholar has had his teaching license rejected because of his liberal theological convictions. Islamic expert Susan Schroeter spoke out in support of Abdel Hakim Urgi, who headed the Islamic theology department at the University of Freiburg for nearly a decade. Last month, the 53-year-old Urgi had his Izya license to train Islamic teachers denied by the stiff tongue, I cannot pronounce it, the SUNY School Board Foundation, based in Stuttgart. The foundation was set up in 2019 with a responsibility for the teaching of Islam in the southwestern German state of Baden-Württemberg. The decision sparked accusations that the application process was being used to intimidate theology professors with liberal beliefs. Mr. Urgi has a doctorate in Islamic theology and has been teaching Islamic religious education for years. The assumption that he is technically unsuitable, therefore, has no basis whatsoever. Well, I would have to say that because you teach something for years doesn't mean you're suitable. So, yeah. So either argument is not exactly right. Islam expert, last month, the 53-year-old Urgi had his license denied by the SUNY School Board Foundation. This foundation was set up. Okay, again, I want you to think about that. Does it mean you're a great teacher if you've been doing something for years? No. Does it mean you really know your stuff if you've been doing it for years? No. It means that you've been doing it. Should a faith structure be allowed to deny you if you go outside their limits? Absolutely. So I'm not against this concept. In fact, I would rather endorse it. But it says something. In this concept, they're saying if you don't, you know, if you're not going to teach what they believe, we won't accept you. So then they're sending a message that being liberal or what we would call as moderate, expressing moderate Islam is not expressing Islam. Ha, that's the point of this. And they're not going to catch it. That's the sad truth. They are just not going to catch it. Some of these things are, it's not a surprise. This is why I'm telling you, if you really want to know more about Islam, go and buy this book that's newly out in Amazon, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad. Buy this book. It will help you understand what's going on. This just addresses the social norms of Islam. And for those of you who, I have some books I'm going to be sending out this week to people who have supported me. So I have to say, I would love to get you to read this and do a book review on the site, on Amazon. Please do that. Over in Austria, next door to Germany, Al Jazeera, the Muslim Brotherhood mouthpiece, is claiming to be a, you know, they're claiming to be a news source. When you think about that, they've been here in the United States, but it's the mouthpiece of the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood is the parent of Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda is the group that bombed the World Trade Center, that we went to war in Afghanistan against. Oh, catch it. Yeah. And this group, the Muslim Brotherhood, yes, again, Al Jazeera is the mouthpiece of the Muslim Brotherhood. Never forget that. They are upset that Austria is taking a stand against what it calls political Islam. Basically, Austria is saying, you know, if you engage in political Islam and you are an imam, we're going to look at your mosque and we're going to put it on the list. Oh, and they're going to publish it. They did. They're upset. Al Jazeera is upset. How dare you do that? Well, the problem is the Austrian government doesn't understand that Islam cannot be separated from politics. No matter how many times that Muslims state it in their beliefs, they don't listen. They're, however, recognizing they have a problem with Muslims. Those followers of Islam who are not into Sharia, they're still using Islamic social norms. Now, these Islamic social norms are not accepted behaviors in countries like Austria, Germany, England. They're not acceptable behaviors. If you want to, again, read about that, you want to go pick up my book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, it will shock you. Some of these things, they're just addressed there. I sat there when I wrote this, and sometimes I just sat there. I cannot believe I'm writing about this. But, again, it's important that you learn these things are a cancer to society in general. Going on, another topic that's in the book, forced conversion, kidnapping, and forced marriage. These things happen in Islam. They are real. In India, I just want to read this article because it backs up what I've been saying in my book for quite a lot. I put it in articles. If you can find them on Blogspot, on paulsutliff.blogspot.com, or you can go to paulsutliff.com and find a reflection of those articles. I want to talk about this one. This comes from Op India, Mass Conversion Racket. Umar Gautam reveals how they target non-Muslim girls from rural areas as it's easier to lure and brainwash them. Oh, wait a minute. Is that legal in India? Absolutely, the answer is no. So the article starts out, earlier this week, the Uttar Pradesh ATS busted a massive Islamic State ISI-funded conversion racket after it arrested Maulana Muhammad Umar Gautam and his accomplice Mufti Ghazi Jagir from Delhi for allegedly forcing over 1,000 people to adopt Islam. The duo, who ran an organization named Islamic Dawah Center, along with their associates, were charged for mass conversion of people into Islam through inducements such as marriage, job, and money, and mental pressure. The two accused, who are in seven-day custody, went from Wednesday, June 23rd, are being interrogated by the ATS regarding their conversion programs and their links with Pakistan's ISI, among other things. Now, according to a report from Hindi Daily, Amar Ujala, the ATS has confirmed that during the interrogation, the duo has disclosed yet another modus operandi of their mass conversion racket. They have revealed that they targeted girls in the rural areas as they were easier to prey on. The ATS recovered a list with the names of 31 non-Muslim girls who fell into their conversion trap. Most of these girls belonged in the rural areas. On questioning, the accused reportedly told the ATS official that it was easier to brainwash girls living in villages into embracing Islam. They are mostly uneducated and belong to lesser privileged families, so it becomes easier to lure them with jobs and financial aids, which was what Umar Gautam exactly did to lure his target into embracing Islam. After the revelation, ATS once again re-examined the list of 31 women and recovered from the Islamic Dawah Center, the organization belonging to the conversion racket's prime accused, Muhammad Umar Galtum. According to ATS source, after rechecking the list, it was found that as many as 12 out of the 31 girls who had fallen into the conversion tracket were from rural areas. Besides belonging to rural areas in Uttar Pradesh, there were women who belonged to villages of Jhankar, Bihar, Uttar Pradesh, Guwahati. The gang members gauged the victims' vulnerabilities and accordingly used it to their advantage to trap the victims and convert them to Islam. Since most of these rural girls belonged to economically backward classes, were financially oppressed, they became easier targets for Umar Galtum and his cartel. Prior to this, the ATS had made several startling revelations in the case. According to Z News, sources with Uttar Pradesh police have confirmed that they suspect the conversion racket ran by Mufti Ghazi Jahangir Kazmi and Muhammad Umar Gautam had funding from India's most wanted terrorist, Jamaat-ud-Dawa, Chief Hafiz Saeed. The Z News report said that Hafiz Saeed's connection to the religious conversion case came to the fore during the interrogation of the accused. It recently revealed how the religious conversion racket was being operated as a motivation camp. Moreover, Islamic Dawah Center, Umar Gautam's organization links with infamous Islamic preacher Zakir Naik-Aid was also unearthed. Op India reported earlier Umar Gautam and Kazmi's plan to first convert the hearing and speech-impaired children into Islam and then use them. Okay, if they can't understand you and you make them convert, oh, and they don't understand anything because they don't, again, hearing impaired, you're not communicating clearly. Yeah. Brainwashing, forcing the children to accept what they're telling them. This goes on. Racket funded by Pakistan's ISI. Amidst all these startling revelations made in the case, it was revealed how the entire religious conversion racket was funded by some foreign organizations, Pakistan's ISI, and other Arab countries. In fact, many victims' families have come forward to narrate how they fell prey to this mass religious conversion racket. The father of a victim named Manu Yadav had alleged that he had received a threat call on his son's mobile number from Pakistan, ask him not to cause hindrance in the conversion of his son. Besides, a lady teacher, Pana Singh from Nurul Huda, English medium, in Fatufar, Uttar Pradesh, had revealed how Umar Gautam had visited the school she taught in with 20 to 25 other mulanas in the year 2020 to brainwash them to adopt Islam by assuring financial security. She had also confirmed how the school under Umar Gautam's influence began teaching toddlers Urdu and Arabic in class. Think about this. It's not unusual to find this, and it is acceptable under Sharia to do these things. Some of these things, you just sit there and go, why is nobody saying anything? Again, this gentleman who wrote this article is saying something. The police in India are saying something. The question is, why is the rest of the world staying silent and not saying, oh my gosh, we shouldn't allow this. Somebody should do something. That's what I'm concerned about. In Yemen this week, Houthis have banned music and song. The Arab Weekly calls this fanaticism, possibly because they think non-Muslims are reading it. Well, if you know Islam, you know that musical instruments are banned. And even a cappella music is banned if it doesn't honor Allah. If you want more on that, please go to paulsutliff.blogspot.com or paulsutliff.com. Look that up. You'll find, or just type in Paul Sutliff and Islam and music. You will find this. I have a piece on this published. It is also in my book. Please, please pick up that book, The Cancer of Civilization Jihad, on Amazon.com. We're down to my last two articles. This one is a little scary because we have, at my church, we have a missionary to Mozambique. Now, this one, like I say, it's a little scary. It's a little close because one of our, one of the people I go to church with is a missionary to Mozambique. This comes from mnonline.org. Mozambique insurgents hunt Christians door to door. Who are we talking about? These are Muslims
Hunting Out Christians to Kill Them. Now, this is by Kevin Zeller. It came out on the 28th. Mozambique needs help fighting terrorism. That was the decision made by several South African countries this week. They will send troops to combat insurgents supported by the Islamic State. Since 2017, fighting in Mozambique has displaced around 800,000 people. Todd Nettleton of the Voice of Martyrs USA says insurgents have often targeted Christians. They say their goal is to set up a caliphate similar to ISIS in Iraq and Syria. And they are, in some cases, literally going door to door. They ask, are you a Christian or are you Muslim? If you're a Christian, you're killed. If you're a Muslim, then you get the opportunity to quote some Quranic verse. And if you can quote them sufficiently, you get to save your life. Otherwise, you also get killed. Nettleton has even heard reports of the insurgents carrying out crucifixions in Mozambique. But many Muslims in the region have encountered Jesus, Nettleton says. We're partnering with Christians on the ground in northern Mozambique to provide help, even just a tarp to put over their heads. They say our Muslim brothers are attacking us, and these Christians, who we don't even like, are helping us. Why is that? Well, that is a great opportunity for those Christians to say, let me tell you about Jesus. Let me share why I'm helping you. Ask God to comfort Christians in Mozambique as they suffer as Jesus did. And pray many Muslims will find Christ and hope in the crucified and risen Lord Jesus. Think about that. Now I have my last article that I have for the night is from the Catholic World Report. There was a bomb put in a Catholic church in the Republic of Congo. And they injured two people. Thank God it was only two. And yes, it is done by a Muslim. These things, again, are acceptable in Islam. It doesn't matter what you think about the concept of moderate Islam. Moderate Islam is a lie. If you talk to Muslims, they'll tell you there is only Islam. There's nothing moderate about it. But this is the lie that we keep getting told. They don't want us to know these things. That, perhaps, is the most disturbing thing. They don't want us to understand that Islam is not a moderate thing. It's scary. The fact that we have to find these things out. And, again, I say scary. Why do I say that? Because the truth is some of these things they hurt. What do I mean by that? When you're told lies, if you don't get to know the truth before you have some experiences, it's a problem. It's a real problem. Now, I would rather you not be told lies. As you've just heard earlier in this show, your school superintendents are engaging in a decision to have your children taught how to be racist. About that. How to be racist. Your school teachers union is engaging in anti-Semitism. Think about that. If your church is endorsing these things, well, it's not a church. It's not a place where Jesus is. Because Jesus doesn't do those things. Even for those who are, you know, your church should be loving. Even to people that hate them. I've never said I hate Muslims. I am against the ideology, the faith structure of Islam. I consider it detestable and evil. But again, the followers of Islam, I won't hate them. I wish them to follow our Lord Jesus Christ. I don't think they have any comprehension of what Islam teaches. At least most of them don't. I think that's quite humorous in many ways because they're not encouraged to learn more about Islam. Because if you don't know Arabic, they really don't want you reading the Quran. Why? Because if you found out what it really said, yeah. Some of these things, my suggestion, you want the truth, find it for yourself. Do your own research, because that's what got me where I am today. I now have 4 books out on the topic of civilization jihad. This fourth one is going to be the biggest thing I've done in quite a long time. I'm hoping that it will be a policy changer. And as far as news and Christian news, I'm going to keep trying to get it out to you. It's not been as good as I have been in the past and getting it out every day into the Sutliff Aid Report on Facebook, on some other venues. My suggestion is to push getting out the truth. Fight to do it. Now, what does that mean? When people try to shut you up on things like Facebook or fascist book, whichever you choose to call it, or Twitter, let other people know about it. Let other people know about it. Call your state senator. I have to say that if I were to call my, I would say look for a state senator who's going to stand behind you. Call a, which would probably be a Republican, because I know that in my area, I live in Libland, New York, and my state senator would do nothing. Absolutely nothing. Why? Because you can't be a good person if you're telling the truth. Yes, that's part of what I encounter in New York State. I'm concerned. We as Christians are not standing up. We are not acting and living and using words that reflect who Christ is. Time to do those things. This is one of the reasons why you have to share the truth, why you have to get these things out, because you want to live the way your words are expressed to reflect Jesus, not yourself. So we have to be concerned about those things. I'm one to admit that for many years I haven't been that way, and I've been fighting and working and harder to be that way. Work on your own self first, then share with the world. Do what you can to get the truth out. And I have to say thank you and goodbye. I'm going to close out the video first. And I have to say it's an honor to do this broadcast. I've enjoyed today. I love getting the truth out. I wish to God it was easier to do. I want you all to enjoy getting the truth from me and hearing that it will not stop. I will continue to fight to get the truth out for you. We have to fight to do that. So here we go with courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
American girls and American guys. We'll always stand up and salute. We'll always recognize when we see your glory flying. There's a lot of men dead, so we can sleep in peace at night when we lay down our heads. My daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Here comes Sam, put your name dog.
dog will fight when you rattle his cage. And you'll be sorry that you mess with the U.S. of A. Cause we'll put a boot in your ass, it's the American way. Hell for Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And a statue of liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be hell when you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell. And it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down. Courtesy of